Hello, welcome to the WDub Review. I'm your host, Chris Malik, and I want to introduce our guest co-host today. It's Jen Bachman. Jen, how are you?
I'm good, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for making some time. This is right after your vacation. You just got back from spring break at Walt Disney World, correct?
We did. We got back yesterday.
I was completely jealous of watching you guys. And you went to Typhoon Lagoon, right? And you went golfing and you were at like Animal Kingdom Lodge. Like, it's everyone's dream spring break, but it wasn't mine. I was working and you were out there enjoying yourself. So completely jealous, you know?
Well, we had a great trip and we tried some new things, but it was nice to get away for sure.
Weather good, hot, or as you expected it?
It was warmer than I remember it being previous spring breaks, but it was great weather. We didn't have any rain, so that's probably a first for us.
Yeah, seriously. Okay, before we get into the show, I want to give everyone a little idea of what they're going to hear today, because it's going to be something different. We're going to do a bunch of different shows together, but I want to give the main topic out because, you know, when you tune us in, you hear a bunch of things. You hear wacky shows, you hear news shows from the Royal Court, you'll hear trip reports. And there are certain things we like to touch base on and certain things we avoid with like a 10-foot pole, literally. And one of those things is literally the combination of Disney with politics. We avoid politics like it's the plague because you can't win. No matter what side you're on, you're not going to win. But there are certain topics that hit that kind of bridge all those categories. And so we're going to talk about that today because this is not a Royal Court Review news show, but there are certain things that have hit in the news that just it bear discussing. So we're going to talk a little bit about the Disney Reedy Creek board situation. We're going to talk a little bit about the minimum wage situation and how that plays out. Because we think, in addition to all the fun and wackiness and games and whatnot, there is some real life things to discuss. So you're going to hear our spin on it. And we're going to try to talk both sides of the argument because we want to make sure that, you know, we look at it from all the angles. So you're going to hear plenty of fun because we're also going to talk about the new Shanghai cruise port and we're going to do some first time cruiser questions, but it's going to be a combination of everything. So I'll be honest, if it's not your cup of tea, that's okay. You can join us next show and no problem. But we promise that if you listen today, it's going to be a good show and you're going to learn something. So all good. First and foremost, though, I got the Bachmans on vacation, and I got them doing something that we've never talked about before. I see a picture of a golf ball and a baby alligator, and the caption says, "We let him have the ball." And I was so completely disappointed in you guys for not going and getting that ball or anything like that. But you did get a picture, so that's worthwhile. Let's talk about the Oak Trail Golf Course. So tell me how this happened and what the history is and why you guys are doing this, please.
Yeah. So as you know, Chris, and as most people that have heard me on the show know, we are fairly frequent visitors to Disney World and we like to try to do different things to keep it fresh. And my son Brady is on the middle school golf team. So I have taken some lessons. He's on the golf team. So now this is kind of part of one of the elements we have as a family. I am not good by any means. So I feel like I need to clarify that, but we are pass holders and we had the water park and sports option on our pass. And I'll be honest, I really never looked into what that sports option entailed. And so I knew there were obviously a couple of golf courses on property and wound up asking him if he'd be interested in playing. And I called thinking, oh, we'll never get a tee time. And not only were we able to get a tee time for the following day, with that option on your pass, it was complimentary. So we wound up deciding Oak Trail is a 9-hole walking course. And we figured that was the best one for us, given our level of expertise. Mm-hmm. So Brady and I wound up going over there and played a round of golf.
That's awesome. And tell me the feedback on it. When I saw the standard picture, everybody in the Mickey cart, right? So that picture is pretty much on everyone's like Facebook page. I love it. And then the pro shop, they were able to go and sell you any products or did you rent clubs? You didn't bring your clubs. So you had to rent clubs.
In fact, we didn't bring golf appropriate attire. Okay. So as soon as I booked the tee time, we went down to the store in the Animal Kingdom Lodge and I bought Brady a collared shirt and I bought a collared sweatshirt because I knew it was going to be chilly the next morning. And then we did find out that when you book tee times at the golf courses, that it's complimentary transportation. But what we found is the staff at Disney World is not well trained on that. So they were very confused about what that meant. And we got bounced around a little bit in the hotel before we were able to find someone to help us. And really all they do is write you a voucher for Mears transportation. And then you go down and they'll call the cab for you and you don't have to pay them. And then on the way back, they do it at the pro shop for you. But we probably talked to 4 or 5 cast members before they could figure out what was going on with that.
Okay. Well, a little insight to that is they're not actually direct cast members. As of a few years ago, and though it could be different right now, they were a golf management company. So it's a different, it's like a third party operation operating on Walt Disney World property. So I'm not surprised they wouldn't be in sync with the Walt Disney World policy because it is a third party golf management company.
Well, it was actually the hotel cast members that had no idea what was going on.
Okay, never mind. My facts are still correct, but never mind there.
Dang. But that's interesting. I didn't know that. So we wound up making it there and we did rent clubs. There to rent clubs, if you have a junior golfer, it's like $11, which is great. It was, I want to say about 35 for myself.
Okay.
And then they give you they gave us a bucket of balls to practice with on the driving range. And then we were able to go out on the course. Now, one thing I didn't think about that I should have is we were just a party of two. So we were paired up with 2 other golfers. So if you are a smaller party, you would expect then to potentially be paired with other golfers.
Okay. Well, some future tips, you know, your buddy Chris has got golf clubs in his garage. So feel free to head on over and pick up golf clubs next time they're there to be used. Right. And that's awesome. Did you guys enjoy yourself? Fun? Or was it like, oh, man, we got into something trouble? Because sometimes the playing partners, that can make and break your day. You know, like at a theme park, believe me, I see it every day. You pair up people and you think this would be a good match. And by hole number 5, someone's coming in for a rain check. And it's like, I just don't want to spend my day like this. So,
yeah, no, we got good partners. One couple was the husband was playing. The wife was just walking, but they were from Montreal and they mostly spoke French, but they spoke some English to us and they were very lovely. And at one point the husband said, slow down, don't rush. You guys are fine. So that was nice to hear because we were probably feeling bad about how long we were taking on certain holes. And it was a good experience. So definitely didn't feel like we were rushed or criticized for our skill level. I will say that Brady was the only junior golfer I saw on the course that day. And I was one of 2 women that I saw while we were there. So he got a little down on himself at one point. And I'm like, buddy, like, do you see any other kids out here? Mm-hmm. Like, be proud to show up and do your thing. So,
yeah, a little pressure, though. You know, you're on a golf course. You want to play well. You're with your mom. You're with people you don't know. You're on Disney. So you want to play well. But just so people know, that Oak Trail is designed as the family golf course. So it does mitigate some of that pressure. There's no carts, like you said. So it's designed so you don't have to worry about things like pace of play. It's kind of built in to that operation that you're out here more for a casual basis. So that's pretty cool.
And we play by the triple bogey rule. So you pick up if you're 3 over par.
Good, good. As a golf course operator, I love hearing that. We try to institute the double bogey rule at our course. Once you've reached double, pick up and just move to that next place. So yeah, exactly. Okay, outstanding. I'm proud of you guys for doing that. I have that as well on a 10-day pass, but it's hard when you have a 10-day ticket to go and earmark some of that day to play golf as opposed to the theme parks and whatnot, you know? So really cool. Okay, let's get into the show if you don't mind. If we can talk about this topic. So the first thing, you know, we've done our preparation here because a lot of this stuff has nuance that you need to quote correctly. So I'm going to hand it to you. Let's talk a little bit about that Disney Reedy Creek thing and kind of tell us what's going on there, if you don't mind.
Sure. So this is an interesting turn of events. I think we've been following this on the show for a while. A couple months ago, we probably even more than that, Chris, we reported on it when it originally all started back and forth with DeSantis and Reedy Creek, which if you guys don't know, Reedy Creek is essentially the government or governing body for Disney World when it comes to their infrastructure, their roads, and their ability to build properties and build on their land, essentially. So they're separate from where they have historically been, separate from being governed by the counties and the state specifically.
It's a Disney created entity. So yeah. literally Disney makes their own government. They have their own board they've created, which, okay, very good. Okay.
Yeah. And this has been in place since the 1960s. Mm-hmm. So this really started in response to what I'll call the feud or the conflict between Disney and the governor of Florida over the clash of the parental rights and education bill, which is also known as the Don't Say Gay bill. So this bill was proposed. Disney had a statement about it and took some action against it. And it created this situation that kind of put Disney and the governor at odds with one another. And as an outcome of that, DeSantis had moved to dissolve the Reedy Creek Improvement District and really take over or eliminate these special access granted to them by being able to govern themselves and roll them into what is then called the, it is now the Florida, I want to make sure I get this right. It is Central Florida Tourism Oversight District. Okay. So Reedy Creek was going away and power would be given to Central Florida Tourism Oversight District. And in that district, Ron DeSantis got to handpick board members to take over. So what happened now, the next twist in this tale is on February 8th, which is the day prior to the Florida House voting to allow the board to take over, Disney got together and put some interesting clauses and pacts and restrictive covenants, which effectively tied the hands of the future board members and stripped a lot of the power away from the new board. So this move essentially gives Disney the maximum development power over their theme parks and resorts since the rights were transferred to Disney. So it went from Reedy Creek back to Disney before the agreement was signed with the Central Florida Tourism Oversight District. So in the end, based on this move, what's happening now is the new board has really lost most of its power. And outside of maintaining roads and basic infrastructure, the way that this deal was written precludes them from truly being able to take over as was intended. Now, what's interesting about this is Disney is saying that there was a public meeting and everything was all agreements between Disney and Central Florida Tourism Board were appropriate and discussed and proved in open and noticed public forums in compliance with Florida's government and the Sunshine Law. So basically what that means is, hey, it was all in the contract and it was out there for everybody to see and nobody stopped it. So I don't know who didn't read this, Chris. This like blows my mind that this happened without the realization, which is how I'm interpreting it. Is that how you're interpreting it as well? As it was kind of a surprise after the fact?
Oh, okay, so I didn't want to interrupt you. There are lots of layers even to discuss, even up to getting to this point. And let me just rewind that before we talk about that. So like, what would be the benefit of having your own self-governing board? So this Reedy Creek, they deal with zoning issues, right? So they allow and approve their own zoning ordinances on their buildings and whatnot. Their rides have to meet certain specifications, and that's set up. That's separate than that, and you know, safety features and whatnot. But as far as like tax incentives, there's another thing. They got massive tax incentives for being this Reedy Creek. They didn't have to pay out as part of a municipality or whatnot. So there's a lot of layers that went into this. But in answering your question, yes, based on that Florida Sunshine Law, where it says everything's got to be open and available for discussion and public knowledge, like the people that were on this board, they were contending that it was like subterfuge, and it was a way that they've neutralized this board, which was completely inherent to or disrespectful of the voters' will and whatnot. So there's a lot of legal jargon going back and forth. So even going back beforehand, though, in reaction to that the Don't Say Gay bill, essentially, the opposition was it became a political football. Yeah. I don't know if the Ron DeSantis's movement was directed and said, you know what, we really need to generate some tax income. It was a political football at that point. It became a political and almost a personal issue. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're at. You've described it accurately. I don't exactly know how a board didn't know that was going on, but I do know that Ron DeSantis and the government in Florida, you know, already have legal professionals looking at this and figuring out if their move was legal, if this can be reversed, you know, and there will be secondary and third and fourth and probably, you know, Florida Supreme Court decisions and, you know, and judgments on this. So this is not an issue over. One of the things I found most interesting, did you see how long this was in play for? Tell me about that.
This is amusing to me, to be honest. And this is not to take sides. It was just the way it was written. Just, I have to find a way to work this into some of the other things that go on in my life. So the term of the agreement, the way it is written is, as it states that the declaration shall remain in effect until 21 years after the last survivor of King Charles III, King of England, living as of this declaration. So how I interpret that, and I'm in no way a legal professional, but essentially 21 years after the last of the current children that Prince William and Prince Harry have. So whoever is the last of those children to pass on, that's when the 21-year clock starts.
Yeah.
And some of those kids are babies. So we are likely talking also, if you follow the royal family, they tend to live in into their 90s or better, right? So you were talking probably 100 years the way this was written.
They have good health care. Let's just say they have really good health care, the royal health care plan. So all I could say is on this story, I could only imagine, like you see like a movie where like the boss is around the table and someone's betrayed the boss or something went bad and he went ballistic and started pounding the table. I could imagine someone was lit up in Tallahassee via phone that night for sure. So, but there are legal proceedings that are taking place figuring out if in fact this was legal. But this is important for a lot of reasons. It's important because if you're a Disney person, you know, you may take side with Disney, you may take sides with Ron DeSantis, whatever the case is, but it's important because it then gives them the ability to perform their own zoning without having an oversight board, which, you know, I don't know if it's good or if it's bad. You know, I don't know enough. I don't think that our Disneyfied way of vacationing was going to be affected much by this, but I think the ability for new projects and construction and things along those lines would have been affected. And there might've been a bureaucracy layer that we wouldn't have been privy to, but there would have been there behind the scenes.
Yes, I agree. The ability to govern themselves as they have been helps to start new projects and get approval for new projects sooner, presumably, than if they have to go through another layer. So it'll definitely be interesting to see how it plays out in court. But yes, the King Charles III descendant inclusion.
Yeah.
Is very interesting to me.
Yeah, interesting too. They went to that. Now, so you're thinking, why would they do that? Well, that really is an excessively long time because, as we've seen in our country, nothing stays forever. It, literally, the politics of the Democrat and Republican Party, I mean, it goes back and forth every 8 years, 4 years, 8 years, 12, you know, whatever the case may be. So that's to say that the next, you know, governor of Florida might not side with Disney and pass some procedure, you know, and rule and say, well, we're going to reestablish the Reedy Creek. So these things, you don't need 80 years. You need 4 years or 8 years, as we've seen. You never know. Time changes and people change their minds in that long of time period. So that's the first piece. So that's part of the story. So we're going to put a pin in that and put that on the left-hand side. Here's another part of the story. So on March 29th, I'm going to take the ball from you. And I'm going to read a little bit from an Orlando Weekly, you know, OrlandoWeekly.com article, but you can find it on any major news source. So it's a reputable news story. So Disney World workers approve a new contract delivering an $18 minimum wage in 2023. And this is the piece where, again, I want to read some of this information. So I'm going to paraphrase here and read, but I also want to have a discussion because I think there are two sides to this story that needs to be discussed. So, you know, there's the Disney business side and there's the worker side and, you know, what morality lies between. Again, we told you this is not a typical dub show. We said that. So you're listening to a conversation like, what's this Yahoo talking about? But stick with me. So after months of fighting for a fair contract, thousands of union Disney World employees in Orlando approved a new union contract on Wednesday that delivered wage increases for all the theme park and paid child bonding leave. So they have a paid family leave here at this point. So let me see here. So they quote about, when we fight, we win. But essentially, nuts and bolts here is the agreement raises Disney World's minimum wage up to $18 per hour, up from $15 by the end of this calendar year. Okay, non-tipped workers in job classifications that currently earn Disney's minimum $15 wage, such as union dishwashers, as well as costuming specialists, custodial workers, and laundry workers, will see a raise to $17 per hour minimum immediately upon ratification of the contract. They will receive retroactive pay to $1 per hour, up to a $16 rate dating back to October 1st of 2022, when the last union contract expired. So they've been operating without a union contract since October of 2022. There are additional raises. So they're going to see a $3 per hour minimum raise by 2023, and some classifications going to see more. By October 2026, the wage increases will vary between $5.50 to $8.40, again, with that range varying by position. And so the fallout of that, obviously, is, you know, it's a cost of living increase that they're hoping keeps up with, essentially this the rising inflation of everything. Mm-hmm. So clicking on YouTube, which is literally now how I receive most of my news information. I'll find a major news source and I'll find a reputable company and I'll watch the news piece. It's like watching, you know, windows to the news stations across the world. They hit an interesting article and an interesting story. And they talked about how on 192, and if you don't know where 192 is in Orlando, essentially, if you went to Animal Kingdom and Animal Kingdom Lodge, there's a road that's about a half a mile south. And it's a major road, goes all the way from Four Corners into Davenport. It's by the H2O Water Park by Margaritaville. And it goes all the way up past Wide World of Sports and then through Kissimmee. And it's a major artery. And most of those hotels there are like mom and pop chains in Kissimmee with odd names like the Top Hat Inn and the Ambassador Hotel. And they look like, don't be mad at me for saying this. They look like rundown family resorts that probably were in their heyday like 50 years ago, but they're still hanging on. And the news piece was to reflect that there's not a tourist living in these buildings anymore. It's all Disney World families and employees. It's all cast members living here. And so they had a woman that was in charge of like a family reintegration housing and whatnot. And she was saying, it's true. There's no tourists here. These are all families. So they had a piece where they walked in and the woman was sharing the room with her child, her husband, a mother, and one other person, five people in a studio. They brought in a full-size fridge. The room was, heck, floor-to-ceiling stuff because it's a studio. It's a family. They've got stuff. And it was heartbreaking to see how the family lives. And she said, yeah, my husband's a bus driver. He's making 18. I'm making 15. But we don't have enough. And we can't save enough to buy a house. So all we can do is live on short-term paycheck to paycheck. And we live here. We're paying enough to pay off a mortgage, but we can't save anything. We're literally living paycheck to paycheck. So, you know, this $4 to $6 raise here is the difference potentially of staying in that place or getting an apartment or getting a home. So this is ratified and valid as of March 29th. And this is a real story, which actually, you know, it kind of parlays into our first story. So here's the both sides of the argument discussion. The first side is the morality Disney would have as the largest single site employer in Florida and, you know, pretty close to the United States is, as the cast members are the heart of the Disney experience. And we agree they are. Mm-hmm. There are attractions all over Central Florida and your home state, everyone's home state. And those cast members make or break your experience. Customer service makes or breaks it. And that's what Disney is known for. You go there to be treated like royalty for that time period. You want those grounds to be immaculate. You want everyone to say, welcome home. You want them to treat you with the utmost respect. And then Disney then has a similar, you know, commitment to their employees to pay them a living wage. That would be the first argument is, you know, Disney morality is we want to have cast members be at the heart of the experience, then treat them like that and value them and treat the families as if they're important, especially in Central Florida, where the cost of living is insane. The cost of real estate has gone through the roof. Mm-hmm. So they need to pay people, a higher living wage to keep up with inflation. The other side of the argument was, and I'm just going to say it, the woman in the article said, we moved here for Disney. So she willingly moved her family to Central Florida to be a Disney cast member. And Disney's positions, it wasn't a bait and switch. That job was posted at a certain dollar per hour, and she accepted the terms of the employment. And it's a retroactive decision to say, we want to work for Disney, but we can't make enough to make a living. So there are two arguments to be had. The first argument is pay them a standard or higher wage so they can make a living. And the second argument is this was a part-time job and it wasn't designed to give you a full-time career living. And there are other jobs in Central Florida that may be able to support your family better, but it's your choice to stay in this job. So I do actually see both sides. And I think it's important to see both sides in the argument to understand why Disney might be a little more obstinate in giving that wage increase out to say, wait a minute, we can't have 66,000 full-time employees. Now, their theme parks, you know how much money, they were the third most profitable Disney arm. You know how much money they made last year in terms of revenue? In terms of revenue.
How much?
$27 billion. That's a whopper. That's a spicy meatball, you know?
So a publicly traded company who's had a lot of issues with stock prices.
Yes.
At the end of the day, and this is not me trying to sound like I don't care about people, because I absolutely do. But at the end of the day, when you're a publicly traded company, you answer mm-hmm. your shareholders. And that is a sad reality of corporate America, right? I have a corporate job. I get it. But the shareholders want to see your stock increase. And the more revenue and profit you make, the more your stock, presumably, the more your stock will increase. Mm-hmm. And when you increase operating costs, which this move will do, then you're at risk for then reducing margin. And that could potentially negatively impact your shareholders. So I think the money has to come from somewhere. Whether or not you feel like this is the move to make, I think it's got to come from somewhere. And so whether that's them continuing to increase ticket prices or increase the cost of Genie Plus, I think it'd be naive to assume that we won't, as visitors to the parks, see it reflected elsewhere.
Agreed. So they asked Disney, will this have a reflection in the Disney pricing scheme, you know, for tickets and whatnot? And Disney wouldn't comment on there. But I think we all know that it's going to be absorbed somewhere. But I think that's almost accepted now at this point. And we understand it's not an elitist comment, but it is true that Disney is really hard to attain for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And by the sheer price alone, I mean, there are certain people that will never be able to afford going to Walt Disney World. It's just the facts. It's just money. It's just how it is. But yeah, it's going to come from somewhere. So yes, I do firmly believe that if you want to make and you want to continue with people at your heart and you put people as your representation, because they go there for the rides, but they go there to be treated really well. And the treated really well accounts for your theme park stay, your resort stay, your boat rental, your fishing excursion, you know, all that is part of that picture. You need to pay them more. But ultimately, it's going to be the theme park goer that pays them more. It's not going to be the Disney company themselves. They're going to find a way to go and do that. But you were making a comment and as well. So I operate. So if you don't know this, I operate two golf courses in the suburbs of Chicagoland. So I'm very plugged in to what the revenues and expenses side of my operation are. So people will always say, oh, you raised prices again this year. My expenses this year are up almost 20%. My growth regulators, my fertilizers, my pesticides, my herbicides, my fuel costs, my essentially my electricity, we buy it as a consortium because we're part of the fourth, we buy 60 something site, whatever the case is. It's up through the roof. My cost increase, it didn't go up 20%. My expenses went up about 20%. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to keep that reasonable cost. So you have to understand when I said $27 billion and I was chuckling, there are parts of Disney that are hemorrhaging and they have to cut jobs. They're going to cut about 7,000 jobs. So they wouldn't confirm they're in Orlando. They've already cut 4,000 and there's 3,000 more. There are parts of the company that aren't doing so well. So yeah, there are parts of the ship that you're killing it and you're just, you know, just making money hand over fist. And there are parts that you're like, oh man, thank God we're killing it in the theme park business. So this is going to come from somewhere.
For the rest of the enterprise.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So now here's the interesting thing. So as I scroll through my YouTube rabbit hole of information, about 8 months ago, we talked about that controlling your own zoning and permitting. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I you know, rediscovered was Disney was trying to address this directly. And they have 80 acres of property they have already laid out and draw blueprints for. And they're going to go to their own zoning commission and approve their own zoning. And they're going to create their own affordable housing area for families of cast members on Disney World property. So we're back to the Reedy Creek thing. Would this get approved quicker? I'd have to believe so, even if it's a PR stunt. Right. But there is going to be tangible good for this. Would it be approved slower with an oversight? I don't know. I really don't. But there is something to be said about having the ability to fast track new builds, new properties, new construction when you're doing your own zoning. In OSHA and regulations and safety, that's all going to apply no matter what. I mean, they're not going to override that. That is going to, you know, take place. But they're going to create affordable housing in an 80-acre complex, which looks like, I mean, it looks kind of like Celebration, you know, the town just outside of Disney. It looks wonderful, you know, so hopefully that will have, again, tangible effect and tangible good for the community and for the people that support and work for Walt Disney World.
Yeah. So, I mean, affordable housing is a huge issue in our country. So any company taking a proactive or I guess even a reactive stance on helping their workers in that.
Yeah.
It's beneficial.
Now, we can only hope this actually takes place and spits out a little bit of help for the families that are working in California, because they're in the same situation, if not even a little worse, because California's cost of living is just so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous.
I love California. I do not know how anyone affords to live there. So
Right. Yeah, watching HGTV and watching them do a 3-bedroom knockdown that's like $750,000, and you're like, sweet mercy.
If you are from anywhere else in the country, except maybe Hawaii, and if you go to buy gas in California, you will have a mini heart attack when you see those prices at the pump. And exactly. That's gas. That's not even housing and everything else you pay there.
All right. So for the second part of the show, we're going to get into the Disney Cruise Line. But, you know, we think these things are important. You know, as Disney fans, it's really cool to say, hey, what's your favorite roller coaster and what's your favorite snack? But there are real life tangible things that are going on here. And since, like you said, it is a publicly traded company and we can all be, you know, essentially shareholders. I am, you know, we can all be part of the decision, but, you know, we also have responsibility. Those who have power have the responsibility to go and affect change. If you could, here you go. Here's a tangible example of here's the news. So, appreciate you guys sticking with us. Hope we didn't bore you. And maybe we even taught you something and hope we're correct in where our fact gathering came from, but I'll share that Orlando Weekly article. It was actually the best of all of them. They summarized everything really, really well. So when the show comes out, I'll put that article in the show notes there.
Awesome.
All right, so let's talk about something that is equally expensive, if you don't mind, but really cool. So Disney Cruise Line just made news, and this was just on March the 29th. Disney Cruise Line is headed to Singapore with new ship and itineraries from Singapore. So I'm going to quote again this Travel and Leisure magazine and go through some information. Singapore's strategic location, world-class air connectivity, and port infrastructure making a thriving cruise hub in Southeast Asia. So for the first time ever, Disney Cruise Line is headed to Southeast Asia. In a press release shared with Travel and Leisure on Wednesday, the company announced that in partnership with the Singapore Tourism Board, the family cruise liner will home port in a new cruise ship exclusively in Singapore for at least 5 years, beginning in 2025. And they talk about essentially how it's close to 40 UNESCO World Heritage Sites and whatnot. While details about its maiden voyage, itineraries, and onboard activities will be shared at a later date, the new ship will feature innovative Disney experiences along with dazzling entertainment, world-class dining, and legendary guest services that set Disney Cruise Line apart. Things we'd expect. Here's what that means. We're going to have a real kick-butt boat coming over to Singapore. It's going to wow you. That's what they meant right there.
Table stakes for Disney Cruise Line.
Right? Exactly. They're going to expect all the characters, Captain Mickey, Captain Minnie, princesses, Marvel superheroes, and more. It's a 208 gross ton ship. It has about 6,000 passengers and 2,300 crew members. The Allure of the Seas, which is not the hyper icon of the seas for Royal Caribbean, but she's a big old boat. Believe me, I've been on it. It holds about 6,000 people. 6,000 people is a lot of people on a cruise ship, but that just means the amenities on that boat is going to be amazing. So what is the wish hold? Do you know, Jen, off the top of your head, how many people?
I don't off the top of my head. Keep talking. I'll find it.
Let me whistle. I'll kill some time here. Here we go. So again, it's close to 40 UNESCO World Heritage Sites. And essentially it says Disney anticipates it brings significant spillover benefits for the wider economy. So what they're saying is we're going to create a lot of jobs, but we also recognize there's a lot of people that like to cruise over in Asia and there's money to be had in Asia. So we're going to make a boat that goes to Asia, but we're going to help create jobs as well too. But they're going to put a big old boat. How big is the wish, you know?
1,000 passengers.
So it's going to be, wow, it's going to be 30% larger than that boat.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. So the 2023 year, this is a very exciting year, they said. It's their 100th anniversary. As part of this, we're going to undergo an ambitious expansion with new ships, new destinations, and we're announcing Singapore in 2025. So would you... In your bucket list, does this move to the top of the bucket list to go see Shanghai and do the Disney cruise? Because, like, we're talking about cool.
Yeah.
I don't want to say cool. That's wrong. We're going to sound like an epic vacation, a cruise, you know, land package there, you know?
I mean, in terms of parks, Tokyo is probably top of my bucket list.
Okay.
But absolutely would love to go to Southeast Asia. And this sounds like an amazing ship. And I think they're going to do it right. So I would love the opportunity to do one of these sailings.
This makes complete sense, thinking how Disney's expanded to Asia with their parks and whatnot. And the sheer population that exists in Asia, you know, including everything that's in from Australia to India, all the way to Japan and China and whatnot, you know, just the mass of humanity and the demand for things like this.
And there are very specific tastes that that market has that the U.S. market and other markets don't necessarily share. Mm-hmm. So this is a great opportunity for them to tap into those. Like a great example of that is Duffy. I would say 90-95% of Americans like don't know who Duffy is, don't really care about Duffy.
They tried so hard.
But they love Duffy in Asia, right?
And Shelly May. They love Shelly May too.
Shelly May, and they've got the turtle. I think it's Ulumel, and there's a whole crew of them. So, I mean, there will definitely, I think, be unique experiences targeted at that market and the likes and preferences of that market, but with that Disney storytelling as well.
So kicking it back here, like 200 episodes ago, when we last had Jesus Crespo on, when he went to, you know, I think he went to Shanghai, and I know he went to Tokyo Disney. He went to Disney Sea too. And he was talking about the most popular thing is like, the 18 different flavors of popcorn there. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, no, you don't understand. They have lines and they have all these artisanal flavors of popcorn. I'm like, we have freaking just popcorn here. And like, there you go. So there's like a differentiation, but you're right.
You can get cheddar and you can get maple popcorn in Canada. So we got three kinds, Chris.
Three. They have like 100. No, it's an exaggeration, but you're exactly right. And they tried so hard. Man, they pushed Duffy on us and they pushed Shelly May on us. It just hasn't resonated, right?
We have a Duffy in our house and we got the outfits for Duffy, but yeah, he's
I don't want to say this is a Disney podcast, but we had a Duffy. I think it didn't make the cut in the last thrift store run. I think Duffy was in the bag. I'm sorry. We tried. Anyways, that brings up our last topic for the day. Okay. So I have a travel agent, Jen. I have a travel agent on with me, and it's important because Jen and Tracy Pizzuto McCoy are essentially co-travel agents for an upcoming Epcot cruise, not this year, but in 2024, mm-hmm. that we're launching. And this is not a sales pitch to get you to join, but since Jen's on, I figured what we would do is we would go through, I don't know, maybe a list of 30 in just a regular conversation form of things that a first timer might want to know or ask about cruising, because we have people joining us and we have like 12 families so far, which is really cool. I think we can get up to 60 people. We got about 50 right now. So I think we got two more families that we can get committed to this. But questions that some of these first timers might want to know before they go on. So how can we do this? I know you had a bunch of categories and I was just thinking a bunch of questions. So why don't we go with your categories and then I'll chime in with some non-witty observations as we talk, if that's cool.
All right. We can do that.
Cool.
So I think, you know, maybe where to start is the beginning, right? So a lot of people will ask, well, when is the best time to book a cruise? And I always say when you're thinking about booking a cruise and you know how many people are cruising with you, that's the best time. So cruise pricing on all cruise lines is super dynamic. There are times I'll quote someone one day and then I won't hear from them for a few days and the price has changed when they get back to me. So I would say if you know you want to go on a cruise and you are comfortable with the dates and who's in your party, go ahead and book. Most cruise lines will let you make an adjustment to your price. So if the price drops and it could apply to your cabin, most cruise lines will honor that up until your final payment. But a travel advisor can help you with that. Or if you're aware of the drop, you can look and call in. So definitely, the earlier you book, typically the lower your prices. And then, of course, cruising is very popular right now. We went through a period of time, Chris, with COVID, where a lot of people were like, I would never cruise or I'll never cruise again. Mm-hmm. And everyone has amnesia from that because we are seeing dates in 2024 close to sold out already. So,
well, let me interrupt you for 1 second. So I watched, again, YouTube. You know, YouTube is the answer to everything. My brain's going to turn to mush. I know it is. But like Carnival Cruise Line during the pandemic sold off like 40% of its fleet. And they went to this great shipyard in the sky over in India where they broke these ships apart. And they, you know, they recycled the boats essentially. Yeah. And there wasn't enough boats to go around. And it's not like you can turn these boats around and be like, hey, I need a boat. Yeah, get in line 5 years from now. So they have to wait for these boats to come back on. So there's just not enough boats to go around. When you were saying how like the price fluctuates. Yeah, it fluctuates. It's freaking going to go higher. Like when they first released that itinerary is the cheapest it goes because every boat's full at this point. No one's sailing like a third full unless you're taking the 3-day cruise in February at the end when all the kids are in school and whatnot. And there's a chance you go on, you know, the locals cruise that the boat's not full. But if you're going at a time of spring break, summer, winter break, and even some of the seasons, you know, off weekends and what, I mean, yeah, it's going to be a full boat. It's going to be higher later on. Right. So, all right. So book it when you think about it first. Are all these fares refundable at that point then? Or do I got to book a refundable fare to get my money back in case I'm like, I just can't do it. I saw Poseidon Adventure. What happens?
So again, I'll give this disclaimer because it's kind of hard to think about. There's obviously several cruise lines. You know, where for the Epcot cruise you mentioned, that's on Royal Caribbean. I think a lot of our listeners have cruised on Disney before. But each cruise line has a little bit of a different flavor of policies and nuance. But in general, there are typically refundable and non-refundable fares. So just know what you're booking and getting into. And I should say non-refundable and refundable deposits. So the deposit won't be your full fare. It'll be a percentage of your fare or a flat rate per person or per stateroom. And there are both refundable and non-refundable options for most cruise lines. So if you have a situation where you're like, I think all of my kids are going to come, but got this kid. I'm not sure what's going to happen because they're older and they might not want to hang out with me, but I want to plan this. A refundable deposit may make more sense for you. Like my family, I've got a 12-year-old and a 5-year-old. They don't have a choice. So if we know we're sailing, we're booking typically the non-refundable.
And she's looking at me because I booked a refundable fare because I have 17 soon to be 18 year olds. These will be 18 to be 19 year olds at that point. Their lives are different. So there's a chance that the whole family goes together and there's a chance that the whole family doesn't go together. But I don't want to pay for the, a person if I know, in fact, they may not be able to attend college, internships, a number of things, working, whatnot. So there we go. As far as like the deposit, is there an amount? Is it 500 per boat? Is it 5%? Is it, what does the deposit mean for? Yeah.
It just really depends on the cruise line. Mm-hmm. And then the amount of time you book in advance. Cause I quoted someone today who is looking at a cruise at the end of May. So their deposit at this point is the full payment. But it depends on the cruise line. And actually beyond that, it depends on the length of the cruise sometimes. So Royal Caribbean has different deposit requirements for their 3-day cruises versus their 6 and 7 and beyond cruises. So it really just depends.
Okay. What about now? So we've made our deposit, we're all good. And then we've made our final payment. When is that historically? 40 days out, 30 days out, the day before? You tell me.
Usually it's 60, but it does vary by cruise line.
Okay. So a little closer, maybe a month and a half or so.
Usually okay. 60 to 90, but varies by cruise line.
Okay. And now we're ready to go. So we're going to fly in. I could even take this one. If you're flying into any cruise, I recommend that you fly in and land the day before and spend a night at a hotel within proximity of transportation to your cruise line. Do not try and tie it in to the morning of where you're going to land at 10 and you'll get to the cruise port by 12. Though it's possible, it's not recommended because as we know in the travel industry right now, all heck can break loose and the boat ain't waiting. It's going. It's
not waiting. And thank you for saying that. That's on my list. Especially people that haven't cruised before think like, oh, the ship says it leaves at 4. I can show up at 3 and be good. No, please do not do that to yourself. Yeah. Even if you're driving, if you're more than, I don't know, an hour or two away, like you need a backup plan. Like just get there the night before. And then that probably goes into one of my other tips, Chris. So a lot of the cruise lines let you check in online in advance. So it may be 30 days before, it may be a little more. And usually you can select what time you want to show up at port. So the benefit of checking in as soon as that window opens is you can select an earlier time. And what that means is you get on the boat quicker and you get to start your vacation quicker. So if your cruise leaves at 4, they're going to stop boarding typically about 2 o'clock if they even go that late. But you may be able to get on the ship as early as 10:30 in the morning, which mm-hmm. is great because then you can hit up the pools, you can explore the ship, you can go to the buffet 3 times over.
I was going to say, let's not play any games here. You're going to the buffet immediately. Let's not play any games. All right. I'm going right to that buffet.
So. You have to do your muster drill before that ship leaves. So,
okay. So there you go.
Don't forget about the muster drill.
All right. So hang on. Let's freeze for 1 second. Let's play on what you just said. First off, download the app for whatever cruise line you're going on. Download the Royal or the Disney Cruise Line app. You need to have that because you can use it as a communication method because unless you're in the middle of the ocean, you might not get good connectivity at all, at all. That's me saying that. So bear in mind, you won't download their app and then your muster drill. Now back before the pandemic, everyone was called down like a bunch of cattle and you had to report to your area of the boat. And then you listen for a speech and then you listen and they showed you where like the life jackets were. But now it's like on an app or even on your screen in your room. And you can just go through it individually. So it's not so difficult anymore. It's not like the mass gathering that it used to be. It's a little different now. But that drill tells you essentially what to do should your boat hit an iceberg, or an emergency happen. You have to know how to go and take care of yourself in an emergency situation. That's essentially the purpose of that. So
yeah, you still do on I think all cruise lines have to go physically to your muster station. But like you're saying, most of it you could do on the app. You can hear what the alarm tone sounds like. And then you basically just show up to the designated station and someone will talk to you for a minute, check you off their list, and you can be on your way.
Oh, okay. So this is very interesting because I was looking at a different cruise boat where they didn't do that anymore. It was all done in the room and they had to click on and then they had to click like accept terms and whatnot. It wasn't actually physically. I don't believe it was Royal though, but I was like, well, that kind of changed the game a little bit right there. So
interesting. I've done Royal and Disney since the pandemic and both of them, you still have to physically show up to your muster station, but 95% of it you do on the app and then.
Okay. It's a 10-minute thing, so it's not a big deal, you know.
It's not even 10 minutes. It's
not a big deal.
Okay. Line is longer than you will spend at your muster station.
What can I pack? What can I bring on board? Can I bring my 3 cases of Natty Light? Can I bring my my fishing pole? What can I bring on the boat? My handcuffs? What can I bring, Jen?
Well, let's talk.
Like, what are you cruising? What are you doing?
Lots of nice sex there.
What are you doing? All right.
So yeah, definitely a couple of things to pack, and then I'll cover maybe what not to pack. So the first day, unless you want to carry your luggage with you, which I don't recommend, they're going to take your luggage for you and bring it on the ship, and it'll be delivered to your stateroom later. You also won't have immediate access to your stateroom. So you need to think about that first day. What do you need for a couple of hours? And so for our family, we make sure we bring bathing suits and cover-ups, and then maybe something just in case luggage is delivered late and we have an early dinner. What are we wearing to dinner? So we always pack backpacks with that kind of stuff. Now, always keep your travel documents on you. Do not put them in your checked luggage. I'm sure people make that mistake, but that's really critical. So overall, like quick and dirty list, right? You're going to want swimwear. You're going to want any over-the-counter medication you think you might need. They sell some stuff on the ship. They do not sell everything on the ship, and it's expensive. Definitely, we like to bring some organizing things for our room. So we bring a shoe organizer, like one you would hang over the door, and we have some magnetic hooks. So if you are a first-time cruiser and you're thinking that the stateroom will be like a hotel room, it is not. It is tiny in there. So you need to make the most use of that space. And that's really helpful for that. Wrinkle releaser is always on my list. So there are some banned items on cruise ships, and irons and clothes steamers are on that list. And so unless you want to just, you might be cool, like just being all wrinkly every day. But if you're not, you might want to bring some wrinkle releaser.
You're dressing fancy. I'm like champion shorts guy in like t-shirt, man. My
t-shirts though get, you know, I try to roll everything up and then I just look like I crawled out of the sewer. So.
Okay. What about power? Let's say you're traveling with your family and literally everybody's got a device now and you got like 18 things to get plugged in. Is your room going to be capable of housing that, or should you pack essentially, extension cord type thing, a surge protector?
Yeah. Extension cords and power strips are not allowed. They're on the contraband list.
There you go.
There are some kind of power blocks that say they're cruise approved. You can just do a quick search on Amazon for those. Most of the time, those will be fine. Every now and then, the cruise line will decide, nope, this violates something. So just be prepared if you're bringing an extra power source that they may remove that from your luggage and return it to you when you disembark the ship. Since you brought it up, Chris, handcuffs are also not allowed on cruises.
What is this, amateur hour? What is this?
So I actually only know this because years ago we had a friend of a friend who tried to cruise with some and they were removed from the luggage. And it's the first time I had met them and I heard this story and I've never been able to get it out of my mind.
Okay. All right. So leave them at home. Very good. We all learned that. What about alcohol? What about beer or wine? What can you bring? Or pop? What can you bring?
Yeah. Again, varies by cruise line. Most cruise lines will allow you to bring 2 bottles of wine or essentially wine equivalent. You can't bring hard liquor. and it has to be corked or sealed. They will also typically allow you to bring a certain number of non-alcoholic beverages, and that has to be sealed as well. So if you're thinking like, hey, I'll bring some water bottles, but really it's vodka, that is not going to work for you.
Mm-hmm. They will check too. And in addition, if you go to each site, each app for the cruise line, it'll tell you how many cases of Dr. Pepper you can bring on board. There is an amount. It could be fluid ounces as opposed to just number of containers. So they're going to tell you you can bring up to 12, 16 ounce bottles, you know, and whatnot. So,
and that has to be carried on and not put in your checked luggage. You've got to think about that too. Is it worth it for you to be lugging that half case of water around before your room is ready? Or are you gonna, you know, most cruises have options to have a case of water delivered to your room for a little bit more. Is that worth the convenience?
Okay. So if you're going on the boat, these are going to be the standards. If you're going on a Royal Caribbean, it's water, it's iced tea, it's lemonade, it's juice, it's coffee, but not like fancy coffee. It's all going to be included. Soda water that's plain, it'll be included as well too. If you want a pop, they can sell you a pop upgrade package. You got to buy a cup with an RFID chip. On Disney Cruise Lines, pop's included. You'll get pop on a Disney Cruise Line. Beer and alcohol on the Royal Caribbean, that's a separate package. You can buy the beer package. You can buy the Blotto package, which essentially is the unlimited alcohol package. You can buy a coffee card, which we were looking at, that looks really cool and actually rather affordable for some fancy coffee.
Like a punch card.
And that's a punch card. But yeah, you have to kind of consider that. Do I really need all that pop if I have X, X, and X available to drink? So it's a personal choice. Some people live on Diet Coke. My mother-in-law does. So I could completely see her buying the pop package for that alone. But it's a personal choice for you. Just, you know, do a cost evaluation of the number divided by, you know, how many drinks you have to make it worth your time to see if it's worth it. Because you got to buy it for the length of the cruise. You can't buy it for 2 of the 7 days. It's maximum length of cruise. That's what they're making their money is. So
That's right. And we've done it both ways. We've done the full unlimited beverage package or the deluxe package. And then we've done it where we just did the soda package and brought on some wine and added some cocktails each day. So it really just depends on what you're looking to get into on the cruise.
Okay. What if I wanted to pay for it out of cash? Can I do that? Can I just go on board with a bunch of cash in my hand? Do they accept cash and credit card as payment, or is everything got to be synced to your phone or your app or your wristband?
Yeah, actually, it all goes back to your onboard account. So is your account, like, similar to if you're at Disney and you charge things to your room, really works the same way.
Okay. So you don't need cash or credit card if you connect it correctly, correct, at this point?
Correct. Everything will go in your onboard account. Now, when you say you don't need cash, let's talk about tipping and gratuities on cruises.
Good. And ports as well, too. Port destiny.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So gratuities are part of cruising, and all cruise lines, many cruise lines do not include these in the fare, but will assign a set amount that is designated per person that would be charged for gratuities each day. So for Royal, it is, I believe, $16 a day for the non-suite customers, and it's $16 a day per person. So you can usually prepay these in advance. So a lot of people like to do that because they don't want to see that bill at the end of their trip. It's all coming out of your same bucket of money, so a lot of people let it hit the onboard account. So it just depends on if that matters.
All right. So you got four people. So you're looking at $64 a day. And so your knee-jerk reaction is, wait a minute, hang on. That's a lot of money. But think about it this way. You're paying a room attendant to come and make up your dirty old bedroom and make you cool animal figures with the towels. And you also got the person that's serving you dinner, and you're paying for the buffet cook, and you're paying for the buffet busser. You're paying for all these people. You're paying for the person at the pool that cleans the chairs and keeps the chairs in order. So anybody that would have contact with you or benefit you on the cruise, essentially you're paying for them in part of that $16 share is how it breaks out to be. So if you have one nice meal, if we went out to dinner, you know, and vacation, that bill is going to be $80 minimum. That's $16, you know? So, I mean, it seems actually rather reasonable considering how many people you come in contact with to ensure that day's success is good on the cruise ship, you know?
Yeah. But there are, and this is very divisive, as things tend to be, right? And we're a tipping culture in America. So this tends to make more sense. I know certain, like in Europe, it's not customary to tip. So there's, I always see a lot of questions from Europeans about, well, how does tipping work? And I don't understand, right? But in addition to the gratuities, you have the option to tip in cash. And that's above and beyond the gratuity that's charged for everybody per person per day. And you will see different things on different cruise lines. Disney actually gives you envelopes, and it's optional, but they will give you envelopes for all of the people, all of your primary people who helped you. So your stateroom attendant, your head waiter, your assistant waiter, the captain in the dining room, right? And their names are on them, and they make it easy to go ahead and give them an extra gratuity if you feel that's warranted.
Gotcha.
For us, when we cruised on the Disney cruise, we had absolutely phenomenal wait staff, and we wanted to give them a little bit extra. We typically do tip our stateroom attendant extra, and we like to do that at the beginning of the trip as well, just to, not to bribe him, but to ensure a little nice.
Service. A little cheddar cheese. So that's cheese,
something you can be. Yeah, I mean, it just helps.
Yeah, of course. No, that's, and you know what? These people are working really, really hard for you, and they may not be from America. They may be from a country that this is how they support themselves, and so it. And, but it does. It will make a difference. They're all going to be treated. They're all going to treat you very well, but it just might make a little bit extra difference, and that's okay. You know, that's okay to do. What about the ports? So let's say we get off and we're going to go to Nassau. Would you recommend credit card, debit card, or cash in the port of Nassau? And bear in mind, I want to put this on record. We've talked about this before. Not every port that a cruise ship goes to. As a first-time cruiser, please get off and explore. Be careful. You're there. You're in a foreign country, though it's largely safe. But you're in a situation where you are now bringing your American dollars into that country, which needs your tourism dollars. But you're going to find people in a different mode of salesmanship and interaction than you're used to. They're going to seem a little more pushy, and they're just trying to get you to engage with them and buy their wares. So some people leave the ports and be like, yeah, that's the first and last time I'll ever go to that port. And that's okay. And some people like going to the ports and exploring, you know, the culture. But just bear in mind, it is a different country. It's different customs. It's different. It's different sales tactics than you might be otherwise used to. So,
yeah.
Money, credit cards, what would you do?
So I definitely would not use a debit card in a foreign country. You will likely be charged foreign transaction fees, which you may charge on your credit card as well. Okay. But just for risk, do not use a debit card. Cash would be my recommendation, and then credit card as a backup if you have to use a credit card.
Sure, because it's going to be really hard, even in America right now, where we have credit card fraud, it's going to be really hard to get to the root of this and solve this and find customer service if you're dealing with a different country, you know, somewhere in the Caribbean. But cash plays once, you know, a credit card could play many times. So, okay, very good. What else should we pack? What else should we be aware of? What else should we, as a first timer?
Yeah. Well, most cruise lines through their app have the ability to communicate with other members of your party through the app. So definitely download that. Be aware of what options you have. The first cruise we did, they hadn't rolled that out on Royal yet. So we actually had walkie-talkies for our family. So we were old school.
Oh, man. Did you have code names?
We did not. We weren't that cool.
Oh my gosh. It wasn't like Penguin One over to Red Robin. It wasn't cool like that at all.
Was like, Joe, where are you?
Come on. This is terrible. You should have had cool code names.
I know.
All right. Well, next time.
Yeah. But I would say too, like, definitely get familiar with the options for you and plan what you can in advance. So you don't want to get on the ship and not have booked any excursions if you want to do an excursion. They sell out and pricing is always going to be better in advance. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Chris, you were talking about getting off at different ports. There, you absolutely can get off and do your own thing, but know where you're going. You're in another country. Know mm-hmm. what's safe, know what's recommended. And if you're not comfortable doing that, take an excursion through your cruise ship. And they will get you off the port at a certain time and make sure you are where you're supposed to be. They will not leave. If you book it through the cruise line, they will not leave you there if something happens. So that is something I would always recommend doing, is look at those excursions. If any of them appeal to you, go ahead and book that prior to sailing.
Okay. What about things like if you're sick, what should you be aware of? Let's say you're on boat and you all of a sudden it's just as a first timer, mm-hmm. people talk about being seasick and you really don't understand until you're on the boat and you're sitting at dinner. You're like, oh my gosh, what was that? And you kind of feel the boat move and your whole world moves. And you're like, I will never make this for 7 days. And you get your sea legs pretty quickly. But what if you're not? What if you have a queasy belly? What do you do?
So we have a variety of tolerances for this in our family, and I am the lucky one who is the most seasick. So I know this about myself. I get motion sick on the Buzz Lightyear ride when you're going down that like tunnel with all the stars. So I call ahead to my doctor and get her to prescribe me something. However, you may not know you're seasick, right? So definitely bring some options. Dramamine and Bonine are great options. You don't necessarily want to be half asleep on the ship, so non-drowsy is always better. If you don't plan on bringing anything, the ship can provide you with some medication. Typically, it is Bonine. But there is medical on the ship. Depending on what you need it for, there may be a charge. But usually the seasick medication is complimentary. Just be prepared. If you think there's a question, we always bring it with us.
Mm-hmm. Well, you might have an idea. If you're a theme park goer, if you're a traveler on an expressway, you would have an idea if you're prone to seasickness. But I'm not seasick. And then yet when the first time I went on a cruise, I experienced it. And it did take me a full day or so to get my sea legs underneath me. And then yeah. I was fine. And then, you know, I hardly noticed it. But yeah, even I was like, oh, man, I'm never going to sleep on this boat. But you get used to it.
You so, do. Yeah. And sometimes it kind of helps lull you to sleep if it's like rocking gently. So yeah,
exactly. No, that's assuming you're not taking one of those like cruises that you see on YouTube where like the waves are, you know, 17-foot swells and the boat's just going left and right and whatnot. But if you're going,
we're trying to get people to join our cruise. What are you doing here?
I was, oh man, okay, so let's just take it aside here. I was watching it where like the wave comes up and it like goes on the outside of the window and like literally it's half submerged in the wave and people are laughing and I'm like, Oh man, that's
a weird. I feel like I should say this is very rare, right? We've done 4 cruises in the last 2 years. We've not had that experience.
Yes. It was an Alaskan cruise. It was an Alaskan cruise. So it
never happens, yeah, but it's yeah. rare. So yeah,
exactly.
I know we have a lot of listeners too with young kids. And mm-hmm. so I would say to make sure you know what options are available and what restrictions there are for your kids. So certain excursions are going to have age restrictions, right? You probably don't want to take your 1-year-old snorkeling. But also the kids clubs on the ships, they really vary in what they offer. So just familiarize yourself with that before you go. And one thing a lot of people don't think about that have younger kids is all cruise lines do not allow swim diapers or children that are not potty trained in the main pools. The reason for this is because if they have an accident, the whole pool shuts down. They have to drain the pool and no one on the ship can use the pool. So if you have a child that's not potty trained, just be aware that they will not be able to go into those main swimming areas and be prepared for that.
That's good. I hadn't considered that for a long while. I haven't had to for a long time, but that's a really good tip. Mm-hmm. Not every cruise ship has child care as well, too. There are some that miss certain age brackets. So if you think you're going to have a two-year-old, it's not necessarily a guarantee that they're going to have a two-year-old nursery for you and whatnot. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So even that varies even amongst different ships on the same cruise line. So Royal, for example, their kids programs start at 3 and up. And below 3 go into the nursery, which is a hourly charge. But some of their ships actually don't have a nursery. So make sure if you have children, just make sure you know before you book what options are available and just what to expect. That's not to say you can't go on one of those ships if you have a younger child, but don't make assumptions about what is offered.
Okay, so we made the decision back when we first started cruising that we wanted to explore the kids clubs, mm-hmm. and we had no reference point. We felt a little guilt the first time of going there, and we felt like, oh man, we're really going to dump our kids off at a place they have no idea about just so we can go and enjoy ourselves. And I will say it took us approximately a half an hour into that situation. Seeing the kids actually enjoy themselves there, surrounded by other kids and people who have been trained to watch your kids in a really safe environment, mm-hmm. with bathrooms and hand wash stations, for them to actually say, hey, wait a minute, maybe they enjoy not hanging around with mom and dad 24/7, 365. And on this cruise ship, there are cool things they can do that is more interesting than toting around and going to get ice cream or going to, the, you know, and so it's okay to do that. Don't feel guilt by that. That's designed because they want you to enjoy yourself as well. They have activities. It's not just, you know, a big empty room of no activity for the kids. It's well structured to make sure they're having fun too. So,
yeah. And I think it's a different experience for different kids. My children are polar opposites. My son is 12. He wants nothing to do with the kids club. It's not because they don't have activities for him. That's not his thing. Uh-huh. My five-year-old begs to go into the kids club, does not want to hang out with us. When can I go back? So you guys know your kids and just understand that some kids are going to gravitate towards that. Uh-huh. Some others just kind of want to do their own thing and just figure out what works for you.
Okay. What else should we know as first timers here? What else you got in the list? How about disembarkation pretty soon? We have to figure out how to get off this boat and how to get back.
Say, Chris.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't receive instructions in your stateroom the night before you're set to leave about how that works. Each cruise line does it a little differently. But one thing I wasn't necessarily expecting our first cruise was usually if you want them to take your luggage off the ship for you, you need to put it outside your stateroom the night before by a certain time. So make sure that you are packing a bag so you can carry your pajamas and your toiletries off the ship the next day if you're giving up all of your other luggage. So that's something, you know, I always like to tell first-time cruisers because it's a little bit different because you're without your luggage then to get ready to get off the ship. And you will get off that ship pretty early. So usually ships have to clear customs and it varies, but usually you start getting off the ship by 7 o'clock. Depending on what group you're in. So all ships will separate you into different groups and then they'll let you know, okay, you know, groups 1 through 5, you can now get off, and it goes in sequence. So you'll always have to get up early your last day. You can go have breakfast, but you have to be ready to get off that ship when they call your group.
And the last one is about 10 o'clock though, correct? I mean, it can be as late as, yeah. Okay.
It can be. But remember, you've got these cruise lines just turn over to the next cruise. Mm-hmm. Starting usually at 10:30, 11, they're bringing the next guests on for the next sailing. So there's not a big window. And just to be courteous to everybody, just disembark when you should. If you are flying out that day, which is totally fine, you can fly out the same day. It's not recommended that you book a flight prior to noon. And that's just so if something happens, if the ship gets held up at customs, if you don't get off the ship, you know, super early, just to give you that wiggle room with flight time. So if you're thinking about, hey, I'm cruising, there's this 10 o'clock flight, Can I get on it? Maybe, but also maybe not. So it just, the rule is to book a flight after noon.
So let me give you a tip that we did. That whole disembarkation process is actually rather stressful if you don't put your luggage out there. You're trying to go downstairs or take elevators, and everyone is. It's like the scene from the movie where everyone's going crazy and trying to flood to the exit at one time. And you're trying to lug, you know, these big suitcases, albeit with wheelies, you know, and whatnot, and try and get off the boat. And then you're trying to go and find either your bus or your limousine or whatever type of transportation you have back to the airport. And then, you know, it's a fight to get there because there's a lot of humanity out there. And then you're going to the airport. It's stressful. We booked an extra day at a hotel, and we just stayed one more day at the same hotel that we stayed the previous, like when we, before we came down the night before, we stayed one extra day. And you know what? We were so thankful. We actually ended up renting a car. It cost me $45 for the day. We got it from the airport, from the Fort Lauderdale airport. We went to this classic Fort Lauderdale, like ice cream shop, and went to Sawgrass Recreation Park, which is the very first flat bottom, the airboat to go and see gators that I ever took. And it was such a fun experience because I felt like my vacation just continued for one extra day. It was worth $120. I didn't have that stress level. All I had to do was get from the boat to my hotel, and then I could veg out. And then it was an easier trip the next day at a 10 o'clock checkout time or 11 o'clock to the, you know, airport. It wasn't the hustle and bustle, because that day will feel like when you go home, you're going to feel like a tension level that you haven't experienced, because things need to happen like this. It needs to happen quick, you know, quick happening. So,
yeah. And I will say, if you want that experience, but a limited version, one thing we typically do is if we have a later flight, we will get a resort pass. And it definitely depends on what port you're coming into. But when we like do Miami, for example, there are a bunch of hotels where you can get day passes for reasonable prices. And we just take a ride share there. They hold our luggage for us.
Good.
Hang out at the beach for 4 or 5 hours and then shower off and hop in a cab and go back to the airport. So it's a nice break in between.
Yeah. Don't play it right into from the boat to the taxi to the, you know, right to the airport. It's a really stressful situation. All right. Anything that we haven't covered that's really important, please look at your list, because these are all good things, especially if you're a first time cruiser. You should wear a bathing suit. No cutoffs.
Wear a bathing suit. I think, you know, we've even seen this with our group. A lot of people have asked, like, gosh, we're Disney people, right? What do I have to plan in advance? And what can I just kind of show up and do? So I would say plan in advance if you want to do excursions, if you want to buy drink packages, if you want to make a reservation for specialty dining or do something at the spa. Those are all things I would plan in advance. But you don't have to over plan your days. So when you get on that ship, all of a sudden that app is going to show you all of the different options, whether it's a pool party or karaoke or, I don't know, name that tune. And you can go to whatever you want. You can change your mind. Like, that's the beauty of cruising. It's so contained. There's nowhere on the ship that you can't be within 5-10 minutes if you're walking slow. So just, you know, kind of wherever the day takes you, and remember to relax and enjoy that experience. You don't have to know, okay, well, at 2 o'clock, I'm going to go name that tune Whitney Houston, but at 3, I'm going to go name that tune Britney Spears. You don't have to do that. It's, you know, when you feel like doing something, look at the app. If it's something you want, go ahead and head there, or just hang out at the pool.
Okay. But most important question we're going to ask, should we be wearing and packing form-fitting clothing with tight-fitting buttons, or should we wear our stretchy pants to the cruise? Which one should we wear? I mean, what is your experience telling you?
I mean, I guess it depends on your vibe. What are you going for, Chris?
Well, historically, do people come back skinnier or heavier from the cruise? That's where I'm going here.
You eat a lot on cruises, and most people do not take the time to exercise or be super active. So definitely leave some room in your clothes if you are one of the people that's going to enjoy the unlimited soft serve ice cream. Most cruise lines do have different, I don't want to call them requirements, but different dress codes or suggested dress codes for your main dining room. So make sure you have some some nicer shorts or some pants, or for women, if you want to wear a sundress, that's fine for that. It's just not really appropriate to go to the main dining room and ripped cutoff jeans and a bikini top. You know, they may let you in depending on the cruise line, but you will get some looks and feel a little uncomfortable. So it's your vacation. You don't need to wear a ball gown if you don't want to. You can if you want to, but do expect to dress a little nicer for that main dining room experience if you're planning on visiting there.
They also have some really cool picture opportunities. So if you did want to come dress up for a family picture, some of my favorite pictures with Lisa are ones we took on a cruise ship where we dressed nice for that evening. Yeah. It wasn't tuxedos and stuff like that, but we looked resort casual appropriate, and it was cool. So remember that as well too. Okay. If anyone had any questions or wanted to contact you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
So I am pretty active on the EDCOT site, and Tracy is as well. And then my email is jen@youpackweplan.com. And Tracy's as well as the same extension. So tracy@youpackweplan.com. So either of us are available to answer any cruise questions, or if you're interested in joining the EDCOT cruise in July of 2024, we would love to have you. As Chris mentioned, I think we're getting close to 60 people, which is exciting, because when we first talked about this, we're like, oh, maybe we'll have like three families, and kind of exploded more quickly than we thought. And that's a great thing. So we're excited to hang out. You don't have to hang out with us all the time. You know, we want to recognize that this is your family vacation as well, but we'll plan on doing some fun things as a group.
Yeah, I should probably chime in right there. That was a concern that was raised to me, was, is everyone going to be by each other all the time? And the answer is, it's what you want it to be. You'll make this what you want it to be. If you want to hang out for lunch or breakfast or dinner or one or none, that's all good. It's all good. We promise you that we are just the right kind of crazy and internet weird. But all in good ways. We all come with kids. We all come with families. We all understand the pressures. We all understand kids behaving badly. We all understand moms and dads behaving badly. And we're tolerant, but I promise you, you wouldn't cruise with a better bunch of people than this community. So if you haven't done it before, or if you feel like it, this would be a really good opportunity. It'll be a lot of laughs and a lot of fun, a lot of memories.
Yeah. So. And we have a few families that haven't joined us before at the original family vacation. So we're going to meet some new people, which I know everyone's excited about. And we appreciate the fact that those groups are brave enough and willing to hang out with us as well.
Absolutely. All right. So join us in EDCOT, EDCOT. It's our friend group. It's our listener group for the show. And if you are interested, Jen can help you. Tracy can help you. We actually have a separate page just for that as well, too. So send Jen a message and, you know, we'll get you information on that. And I think that's about it. We had a supersized show, but we went through a lot of information. Look at the dub show, from dealing with social issues to political issues to
cruising.
All on the same show. So anyways, that's what makes Disney podcasting so much fun. So for my friend and my co-host today, Jen Bachman, I'd like to thank you, and I want to wish you a great day.
Thanks, Chris.